Ner Shabbos, everybody. We are up to, I believe, session number 11 in the Chassan Shmooze You Wish You Had But Never Got. And again, as always, I feel it's important to take a minute to be makdim a few considerations for everybody to keep in mind. Number one, I ask that whether you're listening to these shiurim live or you're listening to them as a recording, please go in order. A one shiur definitely builds on the next. We're dealing with very important inyanim. There's a lot of opportunity for misunderstanding, so please do go in order. Number two, I'm no posik. Nothing said over here is intended as piskei halacha. It is true. We will quote different Torah sources, which I try as much as I can to give you the actual source to look it up. However, people need to go to their halachic advisors and use this as information to help them understand what is potentially mutter and what might potentially be aser. No piskei halacha. And again, to understand that we're speaking about very sensitive matters, and it's really a hirasha because obviously people that are struggling with sexual compulsions and addictions have been exposed to far worse than anything we could talk about in terms of Torah perspective. And even though this is not normally discussed publicly, and certainly it's not put on recordings on the Internet, I think the benefits outweigh the any potential downsides. So we were speaking the last couple of weeks, and really I intended already to end this inyan and start something new, but somebody wrote me a letter, so I'm going to talk about the letter in a minute, which again reminds me, if people want to email me questions, they can feel free to do so at simchafeuerman@gmail.com, simchafeuerman@gmail.com. You can text to 718-793-1376, 718-793-1376. Okay, so in the past couple of weeks, we really were trying to cover the whole aspect of the Torah's view on sexual pleasure for the woman, sexual pleasure for the man, and we came to a number of concepts. You know, clearly, the Torah is very biased in favor of the man having an important responsibility to give his wife physical affection in all senses of the word and attention, and including sexual attention. And then there seems to be a lot of discussion about abnegation, about a man not really trying to minimize his pleasure. And we talked about approaches, and you really need to listen to the past year. I can't go into all of it again. However, somebody did have a question, and I will respond to the question, which will in some senses be a review, although maybe also additional clarification. So I will read pieces of the email somewhat verbatim. The person says that you've been discussing the pleasure of the husband, and the conclusion seems to be that one of the main goals of intimacy is to bring husband and wife closer together, physical and emotionally. And therefore, the husband, given our level of ruchnius, should indeed enjoy the times of intimacy, but you should be keeping in mind that the purpose of the pleasure is to enhance the relationship rather than mere self-gratification. Essentially, that's correct. It's a fairly good summary, although I do think that there are nuances, and people should listen to the shiurim and chazadim. The sources are really quite remarkable. That's my comment. Now, the question goes as follows. He says, it follows from here that if the wife does not want intimacy or does not enjoy intimacy, and therefore any intimacy will not enhance the relationship, then the husband's enjoyment and desire would not be considered appropriate, as it is selfish and not to benefit the wife and the marriage. Now, if this is correct, how does it fit in with what you said originally, I'll leave the letter now and I'll come back to what actually started this whole discussion, when somebody sent me a note and said their wife really doesn't enjoy intimacy, and I said that there is a important need over here that cannot be ignored, that although we're responsible for our own sexual conduct, and that there's no one to blame if we're not able to manage ourselves other than ourselves, a normal marriage involves normal sexual outlets, and that to be in a marriage without normal sex is to be is like to be in a house without a roof. It doesn't make any sense. It's not practical. And we spoke about then in this year that in such a situation, a man needs to go to his wife, or for whatever reason, the opposite is true. The wife would go to the man and say that without shaming and without blaming, that I'm sure that you don't mean, you know, any ill or to cause any harm here, but this is not a manageable situation. It's not realistic. It makes no sense. And if there's a problem, we need to figure out what the problem is. If the problem is something that I've done or a kind of feeling or ruach that I've generated in the marriage, I'm open to hearing about it. But the status quo is not acceptable. Not acceptable in the sense that a person shouldn't practice acceptance. Obviously, there are many things that are out of our control. And so long as it's out of our control, you practice acceptance. But it's not acceptable in the sense that that it should not be allowed to continue without making all possible efforts at reconciliation and at solving the problem. That was my advice to that person, and I spoke about it in the shir. And the person in the letter is saying over here, so if the whole reason for the man experiencing sexual gratification is simply to enhance the relationship, that there is a different orientation between the man's side and the woman's side, that it would seem, again, there are many sources, we talked about it in the past Shiurim, I won't go into the detail now, but there are many sources that indicate the man has a very strong obligation to give his wife pleasure, that is a mitzvah in and of itself. While the woman and the man, if the man experiences pleasure, it's for the purpose of creating a bond, of creating a kiruv das between the man and the woman and the man, and that's very, very worthwhile, very valuable, no question about it. However, it's not intrinsic in the same sense. So here, this man is writing to me that if his wife has no interest in sex, and he wants it anyway, isn't that just, you know, gratification? Isn't that just gratification? So that's the question. Now let's try to review some of the sources we talked about, because it's a good question from a Talmudic point of view, meaning that, you know, in the realm of relationships, not everything fits in so simply and neatly. But basically, the way the man analyzed it in the email, he did raise what would seem to be a logical objection and a logical concern. So let's go through some of the sources and talk about how all this might play out. First of all, there's a difference between pleasure and obligation. So for the moment, let's leave alone pleasure. Mm-hmm. It's important to understand that the Gemara Nedarim on Pei Aleph Amud Beis is very clear from that Gemara, and it's also clear in Shulchan Aruch that the woman has an obligation to be sexually available for her man. Now, that is part of the responsibilities of marriage, and the man is obligated also for the woman. You can look through the Gemara, but the Gemara in the Dharma talks about if a person makes an oath that they're not going to have sexual relations, so the whole discussion, you're not allowed to make an oath on something you don't have control over, and the Gemara comes up with a whole way of managing it, but it's very clear from the context of that Gemara that the woman ordinarily cannot, she has an obligation to her man, and she is not a complete owner of that responsibility in the sense that she cannot deny that responsibility. So that's what the Gemara there says, and then there's Gemara in the Dharma on Teslav and Mondays that similarly makes a point about the man having an obligation to the woman. However, it's important to understand that obligation is different than forcing. So, for example, let us just say that you're obligated to give tzedakah, right? There's a whole discussion in Tosfos, I think it's in Ksubis, in the early Daf, I forget where, but there's a whole discussion whether or not you could force the person to give tzedakah. But one thing for sure, the ani can't steal the tzedakah from the person's from the rich person's hands, saying that you're obligated to give tzedakah, therefore I'm going to take it from you. So the fact that the woman might be obligated to, in some way, provide a sexual outlet for her husband is very different than her being forced. And in fact, the Gemara Masechet Maamar Testament Beis says, Tanya, Hoy Rebbe Meir Oimer, Kol Amasi Bito Lama Oretz, someone who marries his daughter off to Lama Oretz, Kilo Kofta Umenich Lefnei Ari, it's as if he ties her up and leaves her to be a victim in front of a lion. What's that talking about? Ma Ari Doros Va'ochel, Vein Lo Boshes Panim, just like a lion will trample and eat without any regard, without any sense of inhibition, Af Am Ha'oretz, so too, an amaoritz, an uncouth, unlearned man, maka uboal, he'll hit and he'll engage in intercourse with ein leboshes panim, and he has no sense of inhibition, right? So, what does Tosus over there say? Tosus says, pirsha beretam doors va'ochol ein mountain ancha tamus, that the lion eats the meat even before the animal is fully dead. Af amaoritz ein mountain ancha tespayis, so too the amaoritz, in his lust, doesn't wait until the woman is properly appeased, properly aroused. So, clearly, just because a woman is obligated doesn't mean that in any way she should be physically compelled to do so. That would be very wrong. Oftentimes, we have dichotomies in the Torah. It's the word dichotomy or dialectic, where you have two competing principles. Like, for example, it's an obligation for children to do kibud av aim, to respect their parents, and you know, the Gemara and Kedushin. I didn't prepare this again. I think it's around Daf Chaf Tes or Daf Lamed, Ad Heichon kibud av aim. It talks about all the, you know, the great extent you have to do, and yet it's an Isser for parents to be overly burdensome on their children. So, you understand that there could be a dialectic where the person is obligated, but they shouldn't either be compelled or forced. Now, this obligation indicates clearly that a man is supposed to have sex on some kind of consistent, regular basis. I'm not here to tell you how much it is. But the point is that obligation speaks of this. And Shulchan Aruch at Siman Kuf Pei Zayin is very clear that if a woman, for whatever reason, is unable to engage in sexual intercourse, let's say there's some medical problem that causes her to become menstrual during intercourse, and it becomes proven that that's the case, it's grounds for divorce. Again, the woman did nothing wrong, but the point is it's not a marriage. And Ibn Ezer and Kuf Tesvav, Sivches, talks about if a woman becomes a sota, and it's no longer permitted for them to be sexual together, then they can no longer stay married. They cannot maintain a platonic relationship, quote, stay together for the children, if they cannot be married. They cannot have sex, they cannot be married. So clearly, the obligation for consistent sexuality in the relationship is present, and if a man were just supposed to engage in self-abnegation and not experience any sexuality, the Torah wouldn't have all these obligations, commitments. So something's going on over here, right? So on the most basic level, no matter what the other Gemaras and teachings say, which we have seen, that speak about how it's important to limit one's desire, and again, we talked about many approaches to that, and they're not quite so simple as stated. But no matter what, you see, on some basic level, there is a expectation on the Torah that a man be able to have some kind of consistent sexual experience in his marriage, and if he doesn't have a marriage, and that is very clear. Okay. But now let's get Talmudic again, right? That's all true if the woman doesn't engage in sex at all. What if the woman just kind of puts up with it, suffers it, and allows her husband to be sexual, but clearly she's not into it, possibly she's even repulsed by it? What about that, right? Now, you know, you can't say she's not fulfilling her obligation, right? So what's the man supposed to do? And if he wants to experience something more exciting with more variety and be involved with a wife who really wants to enjoy sex with him. She doesn't want it. So is he just being selfish? Right, that's a kasha, but it's not really a question at all. It's not. Let's go back a little bit. Again, when everything has to do with sex, it gets very complicated. So there's guilt and there's shame and there's all kinds of tremendous forces that cloud people's judgment. So let's pretend this was not sex. Let's talk about another very simple mitzvah. The mitzvah of Onik Shabbos. The mitzvah of Onik Shabbos, you know, it's, again, I didn't prepare this particular source. I'm speaking a little bit off the cuff, but it's in Shulchan Aruch around maybe around not Kuf Pei, about 10 Simonim before that. So Kuf Ayin, maybe Kuf Nun, around there. It talks about the bits of Onik Shabbos in Shulchan Aruch. You can look it up. Clearly, it's an Inyan of to be Mechabit Shabbos, and you have to enjoy yourself, and you should even eat if you can. If you're healthy, you should eat meat, and you should have bread and whatever. And there are definitely exceptions for people who are not able to, but the point is, it's a mitzvah to enjoy it. So, can you force someone to enjoy it? What if someone comes to the Shabbos table and doesn't want to eat anything? Should you stuff it down their throat? No. But is it normal? It's not normal. The Inyan is to, as best as you can, try to find out how to make it an Onik Shabbos, to find out what's going on. It's not Onik Shabbos if people are not enjoying themselves. By the way, this mashal is very relevant because actually the Rambam in Hilchos Shabbos, Perek Lamed, Halacha Yudalet, actually is very clear, and he mentions that sexual intimacy is one of the kinds of Onik Shabbos. He says, Tashma Shemitah Me'onik Shabbos. He says Tashma Shemitah is part of the Onik Shabbos. So the issue is not so much, right? The issue is not so much, you know, is she technically fulfilling her requirement? The issue is, why is she not enjoying herself? And if she's not enjoying herself and she doesn't enjoy the act, it really affects the whole experience for everybody, and that there isn't a possibility to have the kind of connection and bond between a husband and wife without this being managed. Now, I would say that if you still wanted to split Talmudic hairs, you would say, okay, you're right, but if she doesn't want it, she's not interested in it, it's still being selfish. It's still being, there's no room to say that a man, quote, needs some kind of enjoyable sexual experience in order to be close if his wife doesn't want it. But I would again repeat to you the Rashi we saw last week in Nida on Daf Yudzayin Amud Aleph, and that's really, I can't tell you whether halacha is like Rashi or not. Again, I mentioned that I'm not here to decide halacha for people. But this Rashi is very powerful, and they don't call Rashi Rabban Shel Yisrael for nothing. You remember what he says over there? The Gemara there was dealing with trying to understand why the house of Munbaz, which was a royal family, why they were being praised for engaging in sexual intercourse during the day, when normally that's not considered tznius. And yet, there's a brisa that praises that family, and the Gemara comes up with an explanation that because they were so busy with all their responsibilities managing the kingdom, so they were not able to really be up in the middle of the night, and so whenever they were able, at times, if they were able to have some quiet time during the day, a lull in the afternoon, then they would engage in that kind of intimacy. Now, Rashi gives an important explanation, and we pay attention to every single word Rashi says. And let's listen in over here. Right? What does Rashi say? Kol shero atzmo mitzad tibo, anybody who sees because of his nature. So let's take apart each word. So here we're talking about a subjective assessment. The person looks at himself, and he sees from his own nature, nenas b'shena b'layla. He's not able to stay up at night. V'efshor lo lirtzos. So he is not able to become interested in sexuality at night because he's too tired. That's, we have to understand the grammar here. That's mitzad the husband. Then Rashi adds, O mitzad tiba nenefes b'sheina b'layla v'ena misratzis, or from her side, that nighttime is too late and she's not able to become interested in being sexual. So you understand, we've got two, it's very clear, we're not only talking about the woman, we're talking about the man too. That it's saying if the man is unable at night to feel this kind of arousal because he's too tired, mutul l'shamash mitasa b'yom, is permitted to engage in intercourse during the day, b'hatzneya, with, of course, some kind of modesty, ala drachum she'eskarnu, in the ways we mentioned, the Gemara goes into it, you have to make sure that you're covered, and all those things. Kedei she'yiyu bi'osav b'ritzoi u'lechiba. So that the intercourse would be with love and chiba, v'lo derech drisa v'tiruf, and not just rushing it, and not doing it in a hurtful manner, just grabbing. And Rashi goes on to say that if you would do, it would be like from the Teisha Midos. It would be meaning the Gemara in the Dharma on Chaf Marbeis talks about people that engage in intercourse, but their heart is not really connected to the person that they're with, that in some way their heart's in another direction. You could look up that Gemara, it goes through different explanations. And Rashi's saying that if a person is engaged in intercourse, but he's not really interested fully with this person, then it's considered like the B'nai Teisha Midos, it's considered a problem. So what Rashi's trying to say is that there's only one kind of intercourse to have, and that's with ritzoi and chiba, and that's where a person really wants to be connected. And that requires the intimate involvement and interest and participation of both parties. And there's just no way around that. And sure, it's a matter of degree. And sure, there are people that are able to operate on a very high madrega, and it is brought down in Shulchan Aruch that the ideal, whatever that means, is to be a keilu kof or shade, that a person should minimize their pleasure whatsoever. But we even saw Rav Yaakov Emden, in Brachos and Samach Beis and Aleph, that he, based on Rav's behavior, who clearly seemed to be enjoying himself with his wife, he says that even Rav was not on the madrega of kaf o'shed. Now, Shulchan Aruch may not agree with Rav Yaakov Emden, but the bottom line is, he may not agree in degree, but he probably agrees in concept, meaning whether or not Rav was up to that level or not is very different from us. The point is that it's reasonable and it's normal to have some kind of bonding sexual experience that happens through giving and getting pleasure, and that, yes, it should be done with the right intention. It should be done not just for self-gratification. It should be done with the true wish to feel closer and feel tremendous hakaras hatov. But this is God's glue. This is what's meant for a couple to do. And that if it's non-existent in a relationship, it's not that, you know, that you have to have a temper tantrum or force anybody into anything, but that it requires some very serious work and not avoiding it. I'm just going to end with a very interesting Gemara in Yuma. In the Parsha Shir, we quoted it once. Very powerful Gemara in Yuma, Daf Nun Daud Amid Beis. Amar Rav Katina says, "Bishosh Ayu Yisrael Olim LaRegel," when the Jews would come to Eretz Yisrael, to Yerushalayim, and they were Ola Rego, really they would come to Yerushalayim, because you only be Chayev and Ali Rego throughout the rest of Eretz Yisrael, and not even all of it. But the point is, you'd be obligated to be Ola Rego from certain geographical locations, and people probably would come further anyway, because it was a big thing to come, so they would come to on Yom Tov. What would they do? Megalon lehem is a parochas. They would roll back the parochas. Now, you understand, you couldn't come into the sanctuary of the Beis Hamikdash, so the Jewish people would be standing somehow outside in the Ezras Nashim, right, or part of the Ezras Yisrael, in the Azara, and they'd be able to have a direct line of sight view all the way down the Heichal, which is the foyer of, not even the foyer, beyond the foyer, the holy of the Beis HaMikdash, which was the menorah. There's the Shulchan, other things. There was a menorah over there in the Shulchan. And then Shlomo Melech, they had 10 menorahs. Anyway, then all the way down, right, was the parochas, which they would part, and then you'd be able to see into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So they'd open up the parochas, Umar and Lehem as a kruvim, and they would show you the kruvim. The kruvim were images. They were graven images, interestingly enough, which is another discussion in another shiur, but they were graven images, and these graven images were not wearing clothes, my friends. They were wrapped up in each other. They were wrapped up in each other. So you had two images, a male and female image. They were not wearing clothes. They were wrapped up in each other. Roman Lehen, we say to the Jewish people, Look at the love that Hashem has to you, the Jewish people, like a man to a woman has that kind of love. Folks, we're not talking about a platonic hug over here. Essentially, the Jewish people were looking into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and in the Holiest of Holies, there's an image of a male and female figure, basically in a sexual embrace. One person who learned this Gemara said, "How do you know it was a sexual embrace? It just means they were hugging each other." And I'm sorry, but, there's a Ibn Ezra in his Hakdama to his Pirush on Chumash says that the Malach, that the angel that intercedes between you and the Torah is your Seichel. You have to have brains if you want to learn Torah. Okay, the Medrash over here is not going through all this trouble mentioning this situation and saying Chibas Zachor Nekeva. They could have said Kachibas Av LeBen. They could have said like the love of a father to a son, or like the love of a mother to a child. They're not talking about a chaste hug and a chaste kiss. The image that the Jewish people saw in the Kodesh HaKadoshim clearly was a male and female figure, Me'urin Zebazeh, wrapped up in each other. We're talking about basically a extreme, ecstatic sexual moment that was happening between these two figures that was being shown. And it was being shown, obviously, with the purest and holiest intent, because it is pure and it is holy in the right aspect, like the Ramban talks about in his Geras HaKodesh. These are not small things. These are extremely important things. And that it is true, again, that there are issues of degree and there are issues of proportion, and there's a lot of self-honesty that needs to be assessed. Like Rashi says, the first few words of that Rashi, you quoted in Anita, Imroa ba'atzmo, if you see in yourself, you have to understand yourself and know where you are. But there's no question about it, that the Torah certainly accepts, understands, endorses, and within the proper boundaries encourages a meaningful, pleasurable, mutual sexual bond between the man and the woman. And if you don't have that, your marriage is suffering and your ruchnias is suffering. And how to achieve that? We've spoken about this in the shiurim, about some of the steps that can be done. And in the Mirat Hashem, in the coming shiurim, we're going to talk more about different relationship ideas and different ways of thinking about how to manage your emotional connection with your spouse. And we'll be talking about that, Bezrat Hashem. But the way that I see it, again, this is one man's opinion. I'm no posuk. The way I see it is the way that I said it. And I wish you all a great Shabbos and a lot of success in everything that you're doing. Again, questions can, I'm short on time today. Again, questions can be texted to 718-793-1376. Email Simcha Feuerman, SimchaFeuerman@gmail.com. I'm just going to shut off the recording. Hold on.